Yes, Virginia.
Question from yesterday.
You're living in the past. Weren't you paying attention? I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. Okay.
Yesterday, you said something that I'd love you to explain in two contexts. One, what it means musically, and the other, what it means to live your life as a student that way, or just as a person in touch with it. You said that in reference to Wagner that he felt tempo was primary, and then you said that tempo comes from Melos.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you need.
You want to talk about that? Okay, I'll repeat that. I was the context of Virginia's question was I was in the first part of the workshop yesterday. For those of you who are here, you do remember. I spoke about a little bit about the composer Richard Wagner and an essay he had written on conducting, which really became a tremendously influential work on all future conductors, those who agreed with him or those who did not agree with him. But his point was, as I've kind of indicated a little bit already this morning, was that it was essential that the conductor get to what he called the melos, which is a Greek word meaning song, from which the word where melody is derived, that to get to the underlying song or the spirit of the work. And without doing that, then everything that was done externally in terms of conducting itself would be missing, that the conductor would just be a timekeeper or a time beater instead of really getting to the essence of the work. And he talked about that for a conductor, the most important thing was tempo, how quickly you played or how slowly you played. And he said that's the most important thing for a conductor. However, that what dictates the right tempo is understanding the melos. In other words, before you get the form, you have to get the content. And when you hear the underlying content of the work, he was talking specifically about Beethoven, but it would work for other composers too, that when you got the melos of the symphony, then that would dictate how you conduct it on the level of form. So that's what Virginia is talking about. So I think your question then has to do with not only in terms of music, which I think I've just explained, but I did make a comment at one point about that when you understand the melos of your life, you would then understand the tempo or something, or that would dictate the tempo, right? Something like that. And I'm not sure. I know I said something like that. I'm not sure what I meant when I said it. So I'll just reinvent it. All right. When you understand the purpose of your life, right? And one of the things I was emphasizing yesterday is that everybody's melos, everybody's song is the same, that we share the same song, as the Song of Prayer says, the Father sings to the Son sings to the Father. That's the forgotten song in the text. That we all share that song of Christ. That's who we are. Then when we separated or believed we separated, we introduce a great distortion to that song, and that's the various blockages that we introduce so that we will not remember that song. And the right-minded melos, right? So, which would then translate to the Holy Spirit's plan of the atonement. Right? The purpose for our being here is to take the blocks that the ego made and redirect their purpose. So instead of having our life, which is a huge, huge block to our remembering God, having that block be a device for taking us away from God, when we ask Jesus to join with us and we ask him to walk with us on the journey, we don't walk with him on his journey, really. He joins us on our journey. But now our steps, instead of going down the ladder that the separation led us, we now go back up. We simply reverse the direction. And that's our purpose. Now, we don't try to change our life. We don't try necessarily to change the circumstances of our life. Obviously, there are some things we cannot change. We really can't change our body. We can't change our families that we were born into. And we may want to change them. We may want to deny them, ignore them, kill them. But the fact of the matter is our mother is our mother. Our father is our father. You know, alive or dead, our siblings are our siblings, etc. We have a little more latitude with families we establish later on, right? On the level of form, anyway. All right, level of content, nothing ever changes. But one of the temptations that students have with the course is they want to change the form. So they want to leave their line of work because it's not spiritual enough. They want to leave their family or their partner because he or she is not spiritual enough. You know, a common gripe is, you know, I want someone, I want a lover, I want a friend, I want a wife, I want a husband with whom I could do the workbook. You know, with whom I could read the text and study it with that person and talk about it. And this schlep I've been married to for 27 years, isn't it? So, you know, I'm going to find a good Course in Miracles student to be my partner. I'm only slightly, very slightly exaggerating, right? There are awful stories about all that. All right, that's why there's that question in the manual, are changes necessary in the lives of God's teachers? And the answer is basically no. You know, the external changes are not really what's important. It's the internal change. It's what is necessary is the change in the mind of God's teachers, from the ego to the Holy Spirit. But everybody wants to make the external change because we're terrified of the inner change. Right. However, when you understand the melos of your life, the purpose of your life, then you see everything in your life from birth up to the present as being a classroom. Your life is a classroom. All the specifics in your life represent the curriculum, all right? What has to be studied, you know, the textbook of the classroom. You know, especially, of course, all of the special relationships in your life. This is the curriculum. What changes is not the curriculum, not the classroom. What changes is the teacher. That's what changes. You don't try to change the externals. When you try to change the externals, you're giving it a reality and a meaning it doesn't have. You want to change the purpose you've given to the externals. So a line I think I quoted yesterday where Jesus says, the Holy Spirit does not take your special relationships away from you. He transforms them. Doesn't change the externals. He shifts their purpose. Rather than continuing to lead you away from God, they are now used as the means, the royal road for getting you back to God through your mind. The world, the body gets you to your wrong mind, which gets you to the decision maker that chose against the right mind and for the wrong mind, a decision you can now change. Right. What that does, actually, I don't think I said this yesterday, but actually it will kind of extend what I said yesterday. What this typically means is that you will be much easier about your life. You'll be much less pressured about your life. You won't have this driven tempo of your life. Right? That your life will be much more of an andante or an adagio than an allegro. You won't be rushing. Allegro means fast. Andante is kind of slow, and adagio is very slow. That you'll be patient. So one of the characteristics of an advanced teacher of God is patience. You'll be patient with yourself. You will let things unfold. You won't drive them. You won't try to make them happen. You won't try to make yourself holy or spiritually healthy. Right? You won't strive to get through A Course in Miracles more quickly than everybody else in your group. You know, there won't be that pressure because you've understood the purpose of your life. Remember, melos determines tempo. The purpose determines the tempo. And when you realize I'm here to learn and I don't have to change anything, and learning can occur in an instant. I don't have to speed it along. If I'm speeding it along, I'm already ensuring that I won't learn. You know, people will decide, for example, that, you know, this relationship is a disaster, but this is a wonderful learning. This will speed up all of my learning. I'll save 1,000 years by continuing to live with this abusive person. You know, sock it to me each day. That's great. You know, abuse me. That's how I'll learn I'm not a body, you know, as I was saying briefly earlier. But, you know, people do that. You know, there's one disastrous story of a woman who lived in another country, wasn't here, who was a lesbian, who decided as a student of the course that she was going to learn she was not her body. So she walked in a neighborhood late at night that she knew she should not be walking on in a waterfront. And what happened was exactly what she thought would happen and therefore should happen. She was raped, and it was a disastrous, disastrous experience for her. And she felt while this was going on, she was being a good student of the course. She was maximizing her learning. She was going not only allegro, she was going presto, prestissimo, which is very, very, very fast. And she was going to move everything along and help Jesus do his work. And she would learn she was not a body. All right, now, you know, you don't have to be a spiritually advanced person to know there's something very wrong with that. And to believe that Jesus or God would want you to go through such a hell so that you could learn that hell is an illusion, is there's something very wrong with that portrait of God. right? But that comes from not understanding purpose, and especially not understanding who the conductor is. We always want to grab the baton. Right? And when we grab it, we would speed up the tempo, because we'd say, I want to get through this as quickly as can, and I don't want to come back. Whenever you say, I don't want to come back, you're ensuring that you damn well will be back, whatever that means. Because why would you not want to come back unless you felt this was the problem? You would feel this world is hell, being in this body is a prison, so I want to get out. Well, you've already made it real. Which means, how could you get out of something you've made real? I mean, the world is not a prison. Your body's not a prison. But you've made it that way, which means you're the jailkeeper. And it's your mind that thinks this is so awful that says, I'll never come back. I'm going to see to it, I'll never come back. I'm going to get this course perfectly. You know. And if Jesus doesn't do it fast enough, I'll grab the baton and I'll really make this move. And I'll set up real lessons for myself so I can learn that I'm not a victim. That's because you don't understand purpose. The purpose is not to get out of the world. The purpose is to stay right where you are and to change your mind about the world. And part of the purpose will be the understanding of the terror you feel of that purpose. And you know you're terrified of that purpose because you're here. Right? If the purpose is to awaken us from the dream and know we've never left home and we're still part of God's living and loving oneness, that's the purpose. Well, the fact that I'm here is telling me I ran away from that. So there's a lot of fear of that love and that oneness. So part of understanding the melos of your life, which would dictate the tempo, is that you would go slowly. And you would go slowly because you would respect your own fear and you would not try to impose anything on yourself. You would not try to change your ego. You know, forget about trying to change other people's egos. You would not try to change your ego, because to try to change it gives it a reality, gives it a power it does not have. When you look at your ego with Jesus, you're not trying to change it. You're trying to change your perception of your ego. Remember, the problem, once again, was looking at the tiny mad idea and taking it seriously by remembering not to laugh at it. That was the problem. Therefore, the solution is to look at the tiny mad idea in the forms in which I think it now appears, which is my life, and all the forms of specialness and separation that I and hate and attack that I that are the core of my life. But I look at them now with the gentle smile of Jesus next to me. Right, so as Jesus says in that same section, he says, you will leave the holy instant in gentle laughter with your brother's hand joined with his, meaning the Holy Spirit. Meaning you will look at your ego now with gentle laughter. You look at it, you don't change it. So you look at your life and you say, this is the curriculum that I wrote. The Holy Spirit does not write the curriculum. This is the curriculum that I wrote, all of my specialness, all of my anxieties, all of my fears, all of my past difficulties, everything with my body. But now I look at it differently, which means I continue to go through my normal life like every other normal person. But I now go through it differently with a loving hand in mind that walks through it and helps me look at what it is that I had made to be so awful. So you don't change the externals. You don't try to dictate what would be the spiritual thing to do or the unspiritual thing to do. You do what normal people do. You know, your body does what normal bodies do. You know, you interact with other people the way other people interact. But now you do it in a different way. So again, understanding the purpose of your life will dictate the tempo. You know, and more often than not, that tempo would be slow and measured, so that you could learn from each and every aspect of it. And you'd be slow and measured, which means patient, with everybody else. You won't demand that other people get healed yesterday. You'll be patient with other people's egos because you have learned to be patient with your own. And you learn to be patient with your own as you learn to be patient with other people's egos. Impatience means that the other person's ego has had an adverse effect on you. And so you feel attacked by other people's laziness, other people's stupidity, other people's anger, other people's hatred, other people's specialness, other people's anxiety, other people's neurosis, other people's phobias, other people's inhibitions, other people's whatever it is, and you've been attacked. And that now justifies you in getting annoyed and getting angry and trying to change them. Not because you care about them, you just care about the effect they have on you. So whenever you're in that mode, don't crucify yourself because you're crucifying somebody else, but be aware of what you're doing. You want to see the reality of their ego, right, and the noxious element in their ego because you're so guilty over what you believe to be your own. And that's what the process is. So again, to summarize what I was saying yesterday and what I said now, when you understand the purpose of your life, you'll be more patient and tolerant and understanding and kinder and more gentle towards yourself and everybody else. So, I didn't answer it right?
Yes, but can I go to the next part that made the past of yesterday?
Yes.
Made the past of yesterday an unpleasant day for me? It's difficult to hear that in my perception, the world lives as a Tuscanini, especially me.
I'll explain that. I'll go into that. Okay.
That if the notes, which is the self, is what we're afraid to let go of, yet it's what we want to let go of, my reactions to the world around me, to things that are difficult, whether it's a personality or, I'll use Temecula because it works well for me.
It works poorly for you, not well for you.
Well, it's an example.
Right.
Of one that I'm going to change my tempo on. That it's artificial, that it's in a desert, that it's prefab, that it's unattractive, that it's congested, that it's pollutes, that it shouldn't be here. And other people have a different opinion of it, which I'd love to share. However, that's me who likes the ocean. If I see that life, we try to lead it to do the form better so that, because that alleviates, we think as an ego it alleviates guilt. So doing a job right, or being so engrossed in a job, or and then we take, we think we've succeeded or we've triumphed or we're doing better in our life because we run an organized household or, you know, but if we're focused on the notes, it's the melos you're talking about is how to live the notes of life without engaging in it.
Yes. Yeah. I'll repeat. I'll try to get to it.
Yeah. You know, take something out there.
Yes. All right. All right, well, your last line actually says it all, but I'll recap a little bit. The last line is basically that the melos of our life, the purpose of our life is learning how to be here without engaging in it, how to be in the world and not of it. All right, okay, just let me, all right, Virginia began by talking about the Tuscanini thing. I used Tuscanini yesterday when I was talking about conductors to contrast the two schools of conducting. It's a little unfair because Tuscanini seems to come off poorly in this, but he was really a great conductor. Actually, you've never heard Italian opera unless you've heard him conduct it. I mean, nobody was like he was. But he does represent a school of conducting, of being absolutely faithfully precise to the printed note. To the exclusion, so his critics say, unfortunately I'd be among them, of the spirit of the work, especially when he did German music. And he's contrasted really with Furtwängler, that I spent a lot of time talking about yesterday, who's an example of really the Wagnerian ideal of what a conductor is, who penetrates behind the notes. And so when you hear a performance of his, that you're really getting into the spirit of the work. And you could feel that when he conducts, and he's dead now, but certainly there are a lot of recordings, that you feel that the symphony is an organic being. It's alive. It's not just notes. And he, when you hear a performance of his, especially the live ones, which are really the great performances, you hear a ton of mistakes. The orchestra is not always in unison. The entrances are sometimes a little fuzzy. But the Furtwängler lovers, of which I am among them, you don't care because it's not the form, it's the content. Toscanini, on the other hand, the form is almost perfect. I mean, you hear every single note, and I mean, it's extraordinary what he did at an orchestra. But the sacrifice is that the form is perfect, but the content is not always there. But again, there are a large number of people who worship everything Toscanini did. So, at any rate, he was really used as an example of getting the form perfect without the content. All right, and Furtwängler, on the other hand, would not always have the form perfect, but the content would be glowing. All right, so Virginia's question had to do, and I think of accusing herself of being a Toscanini person, of getting the details right and the form right. Is
that, and the world trying to do that always.
Yeah, and the world trying to, in a sense, trying to make the world work and try to get the note on the page, you know, the music on the page, be perfect, you know, without getting beyond it. I'm not really sure what the question is, except that the idea is that you don't want to engage on the level of form. You don't want to engage the world on the level of form. You want to engage on purpose. So Virginia made it very clear that she does not like Temecula. She's a New England person. She grew up in Cape Cod, and this is light years away from that kind of environment. But what that does, focusing on the form, is that it acts as an impediment to identifying with the content or the purpose. All right. So the purpose for Virginia being here has nothing to do with liking this area, but because this is where the foundation is. All right. So when we moved, she moved too, because she's identified with the foundation's purpose, and that's very important for her. That's the melos. All right. Then it's the fear of that. I'm now kind of adding a little bit to what you're saying. It's the fear that, but this would be the fear that everyone have, regardless of what the form would be. The fear is of the meaning of that, of the truth of what it means to be here as part of the foundation, and the love that represents. And then the defense against that, the protection for the fear, is to focus on everything that's wrong. And you can always find something wrong, whether you're living here or even Cape Cod, I will say, right? Although I like Cape Cod too. That you could find fault with anything if you're looking for it. And again, when you find yourself finding fault with the form, it is always without exception because you're defending against the content. And so using Toscanini and Furtwängler as just symbols, right? That you then are afraid of the content, you're afraid of the music behind the notes, so then you just focus on the notes. And you could always find fault with the notes. You could always find fault with the form. You know? And again, that doesn't mean that you have to like the form. It doesn't mean that the form has to be your preference. But when you find yourself attacking it or criticizing it or being upset with it, then you're giving it a power it doesn't have. And that happens only because that whole thing then becomes a defense against the purpose, the melos. So, is that? Yeah, Virginia's particularly upset with the traffic and driving. So again, but then realize, as she and I have spoken, so I'm not saying anything I haven't already said to her, that you could be in a car stalled in a traffic jam, and they have traffic jams here. It's not like the Long Island Expressway in New York, but you have traffic jams, and you could be peaceful, you know, and the choice not to be peaceful or the lack of peace is not because of the cars. And it takes you 20 minutes to go someplace that should only take you 5. All right, that the lack of peace you're feeling is not because of the traffic. The lack of peace is because you don't want to be at peace. And then the traffic there becomes a convenient scapegoat.